Listen, I was going to do this intro by singing something to the tune of the theme song, like we watch Blazing Saddles, something like that. But then it turned out that we had to do this remote and I'm at my office and like my coworkers like me well enough, but not loudly singing parody songs at 1 p.m. well enough. So, let's just say Sean only pawn in Game of Life and move on. Blazing Saddles was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Number one.
The number one movie in America.
Whoa, number one.
The number one movie in America.
Number one.
The number one movie in America.
Oh, wow, number one.
The number one movie in America.
Number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Hi, yes, my name's Sean Collier. I'm tending slightly towards my NPR voice. I have to be a little bit more quiet and soothing than usual
I
today.
like it.
And I'm here with two people who just wanted to watch this boxing match, but there's a big chinchilla hat in their way. It's Camila Adams.
My man.
And Robin Hitchcock.
And a chinchilla coat.
I know, but it was the hat. The hat would block your
I
view.
said
That's what I'm
and.
Said and.
Oh, okay.
And
Oh, it's got big enough shoulders, man.
Yes,
it might.
and.
It might. This is why we invented luxury boxes, so that expensive coats could be away from the rabble. All right.
Exactly.
American Gangster, we liked it. 15th place overall with 81 and two-thirds. That's high. We've watched a lot of movies.
Yeah. It still ranks up there. And I think it was on the other day too. Again, it's like, oh yeah, good stuff. I guess we'll talk about it much later, but like I in the same vein as watching gangster movies, I watched Goodfellas for the first time, which was surprising to me because
Oh.
Oh, wow.
it was one of the Goodfellas is one of those movies that you assume you've seen. And then as I was watching, I was like, I have never seen this movie.
Like me last week with Heat. This is
Right.
your it's your turn.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, hey, nice Ray Liotta chat forthcoming. In the meantime, here's the thing we didn't address last week. Did anyone notice this was our fourth Ridley Scott movie?
No.
I was thinking about how we've talked about him a lot.
And we've only done, I mean, it's a lot, but we've talked about what, about 115 movies, so for
Right.
four of them to be
That's
by the same guy.
wild.
The rankings are Alien is obviously at the top with 89 and a half. That's our number two overall, followed by American Gangster, 81 and two-thirds. The Martian, 76 and two-thirds, which is higher than I remember. That number is higher than I remember us liking that movie.
That
I think
movie is
there's a,
very pleasing.
yeah, I think the kicker was I was like the wild card because I wasn't expect I
Right.
went in not expecting to like it, and then I
We
did.
all thought Camila was going to want to punch Mars.
Right. And what's down at the bottom? Black Hawk is down at the bottom with
Oh,
42
yeah.
on our. Speaking of, let's just go. Speaking of Camila not liking things,
Ooh.
There's really no other way to enter in this week other than to say we're talking about Blazing Saddles.
Oh, sweet baby
Robin
Jesus.
and I on some level grew up with it. I assume Robin you saw
Oh, I saw
it
it a
at an
bunch when
early
I was a
age.
kid.
Right,
Yes.
as did I. Camila's brand new to it. And last night, as I'm just poking around Letterboxd, as I do every day, I happen to see that Camila has put her rating out for Blazing Saddles. And it is not a good number. It is a very, 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 very low number.
Very
unfavorable
number.
Do we get one star
You
out
get
of you?
one star. One
One star. Okay.
star. And it's for the gag where, they trick the racists into singing old Negro spirituals.
Yes. Yes.
And also to be 100% honest, like first of all, I wasn't even going to watch it. Like I watched the trailer and I was like, I don't know. I don't know. I don't feel comfortable with this. And then I didn't want to, and I thought, and Fubo was like, hey, you can watch for free here, but I'd have to do a trial and all that stuff. I'm like, never mind. And then I was going to just like watch chunks of it on YouTube just to do as much as I could. And then Dan was like, you probably should, blah, 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 yada, yada. I was like, okay, fine. I'll pay the $4 and I'll rent it and I'll watch it. Dan was like, I'll sit and watch it with you. I'm like, all right. I get 64 minutes into the film and I am furious. I had to stop it. I had to stop the film. I have not completed watching the film. I think the only other Mel Brooks movie I've ever watched was Robin Hood Men in Tights. And I remember enjoying that, but I was also like on a Cary Elwes high at the time, which is only the reason why I watched it. So I haven't seen it since. But yeah, like this movie, it's just basically, to me, I think the hardest part is the fact that these gags could have happened without using the N-word so freely and so forcefully and so many times. One. Two, what's also really kind of fucked up to me is just that this is like, what, 40 some odd years later, and this stuff is still very relevant. Like, you know, I guarantee you that there was a pocket full of Pittsburghers who, when Ed Gainey was made mayor, were an N-word is the new mayor. You know, just like when old dude came to town talking about the new sheriff. So it's just like, I can't really remove myself from anything that was happening on the in the film. And yeah, and just like, you know, hide your white women, that kind of, you know, that whole thing. I just, it's just too much for me. I just couldn't do it. So
I don't know. I am putting you on the spot, but I also felt like putting you on the spot was better than, you know, trying to white-splain why Blazing Saddles is good. This is interesting and illuminating because I think there's probably not that many people who are coming to it new in 2022.
Can I interrupt you for a second?
Please.
So I started watching this yesterday afternoon with Colin. I just assumed Colin had seen this. Like, this is one of those movies that everyone our age, I'm like, you've seen Blazing Saddles, right? Anyway, we started watching it. Slurs start flying. And Colin went, what the fuck? I thought this was a comedy. And I was like, yes. And he's like, it's Mel Brooks, right? And I'm like, yeah, and it's from 1974. And I was like, are you kidding right now? Like, is this a joke? Do you really not know that Blazing Saddles is like this? He's like, no, I had no idea this is like this. And he wouldn't watch it. So he's a white guy.
Right.
And he was like, I can't take this. So I worried about you, Camila. And I am sorry that I feel like we didn't properly brace you for this. And that sucks.
I mean, that's cool. And I mean, I totally get it. But I mean, yeah, but it's just, I mean, it's difficult. And you, I mean, I don't know when last time either one of you had seen it prior to this, like maybe it's not something that was in the forefront of your mind when thinking about the movie, you know, and it's, and I would assume, you know, that a lot of people probably have that experience. And, you know, you saw it at a young age, you remembered enjoying it. And it's a different time, different era. I get it. But it's still, it was a hard pill to swallow, and it was just a difficult, and I couldn't finish watching it just because it was just all too much for me mentally and emotionally, and I wanted to, like, and I was like, I cannot go to bed like this. I need to, because, like, I should have started that shit, like, days ago in the middle of, in the morning or something. But, yeah, it was a rough go.
I will say that I thought when I was watching the end of it, oh man, it's too bad Colin's not seeing the part of this movie that's actually good, which we'll get to, I guess, with the plot description.
Yeah,
Yeah, we're kind of delaying the main points here, but it felt important to get to this off the bat. It's interesting because I always knew this as the movie that makes fun of how dumb racists are. Because the structure of it is that the racist the salt of the earth, you know, morons, are the butt of every joke, more or less. So having known that was the intent and grown up with the movie, I wasn't going to be shocked by it. So I didn't stop to think about how this looks anew.
Right. Yeah. I mean,
we might be belaboring the point.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's, and I also, I don't think I'm, I don't enjoy that Mel Brooks humor, really, that loud slapstick, that vaudevillian kind of thing. But in all honesty, I still think that all of those gags could have happened and the whole point could have been made. I mean, I get it. It's, you know, they're, you know, who the butt of the jokes actually are, but we could have done it without the slurs.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah. Well, let's get into our segments and we'll circle back around to it, I'm sure. This is all just build up to, but how many points can I still give it? Like, how much can I go, yes, correct. On the other hand, I like when he punches the horse. That's what I'm grappling with. Because my struggle is the important thing here.
Oh, boy.
But, you know, Sean, I mean, I would see it in a kind of the sense of how you personally take offense to the way people with mental disabilities are portrayed in movies like Split. Yeah. That was hard for you. That was harsh on you, and you did not appreciate any of it at all. And, you know, and also, like, I empathize. I get it. It did not strike me as much as it did you. So, yeah. Therefore, you know, obviously my rating for Split was much higher than yours. So, you know, I mean, it's kind of, it's the way of the world.
Everybody has blind spots.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah. So let's get to the segments and tell you about it before we get back into a discussion, which involves a 60-second plot recap. If you also have never seen Blazing Saddles, well, maybe you shouldn't at this point. Maybe this ship has sailed.
Let me just preface this, though. This is a sanitized plot summary because, mm-hmm. well, we'll discuss it afterwards. Because it's a sanitized plot summary because you could have done this movie and done it well without most of the offensive content and all of the slurs.
Mm-hmm. So we'll limit you to 52 seconds remove all of the Here's Robin Hitchcock summarizing Blazing Saddles, and go.
It's 1874 in the West. The town of Red Rock stands in the way of plans to extend the railroad. Residents of the town won't play ball and move out of the kindness of their hearts, so Hedley Lamarr comes up with a plan to make them want to move by hiring a black guy to be their sheriff. Too bad! Sheriff Bart is extremely charming and capable, and everybody likes him, especially Gene Wilder's Jim. Even Teutonic temptress Madeline Kahn falls for Bart. The bad guys get together with the old-fashioned way of violence, building a posse of the KKK, bikers, German soldiers, etc. Bart rallies the railroad workers to come to the aid of Red Rock in exchange for acceptance into the community. They build a perfect copy of the town and themselves as a distraction. Now the wheels really come off the wagon as we enjoy some Bugs Bunny shit and chase through the studio lot into a theater playing Blazing Saddles, possibly into your own living room, and back to the film where the good guys win. Bart and Jim ride off into the sunset in a limousine.
That was 48 seconds, and I couldn't help but notice that when Camila heard the part that she had turned it off before, she rolled her eyes. Like, of course.
Right.
So, my thesis on this movie is, I remembered it all being like the last 20 minutes.
Mm.
Is that why this movie is famous? Or is this movie famous because people like all the slurs and fart jokes?
I think it might be the last 20 minutes because as I was going through Letterboxd, I was looking at a lot of reviews and a lot of favorable reviews. But it was mostly in those reviews, everybody was talking about the last 20 minutes or so, or the end of the movie.
Okay, good. Good.
Yeah.
You know, when you said maybe it wasn't at the front of our mind that there were a lot of slurs in it, that's not true. Like, when I think of this movie, I think of two things. I think of the weird Bugs Bunny shit, and then I think about comedians saying, you know, you couldn't make Blazing Saddles today. I don't know if you know this, Camila. That is, like, white comedians' go-to.
Gotcha.
You can't make the jokes you used to be able to make.
And I guess I've probably heard comedians say that, and because I'd never seen it, I was like, I don't know.
It's always a ridiculous thing to say, because first of all, you could.
Right.
Clearly, you would find your audience. And secondly, why would you?
Right. Right.
No, I mean, it was targeted at the particular variety of... What did he say? He said something like this was his response to white apathy, racism, and Bible-thumping bigotry.
Mm.
So it was very clearly targeted at both the particular political moment and, like, the weird Old West nostalgia that was prevalent at that time. And also, anyone making that argument definitely missed the point. Like, this isn't a movie that's like, be offensive because that's your free speech, right? That's right. Not what it's about.
But it isn't. It isn't. Because, like, if you think about it, like, you know, going back to, it was interesting, Camila brought up, like, Sean, you've been sensitive before about depictions of mental disabilities. So they have that character whose name I won't even say.
Which character? Not by name, but by description, please.
The big O-fish guy.
Yeah.
They're not doing that to poke fun at ableism. They're doing that to be ableist.
Mm.
And to me, that really calls into question a lot of the, like, wink, wink, we're really not racist.
Yeah. And I know that Richard Pryor was a writer, or the writer, one of the writers for this. And
there's several writers, but he's credited.
So, and I don't know what part he played in all of this, but I feel like he also kind of... Him being involved kind of gave them all a, well, if he says it's okay, you know, like the same way Tarantino uses Sam Jackson.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
That also doesn't sit well with me.
There are some genuinely clever anti-racist jokes, I think, in here. My favorite is when Hedley Lamarr puts his like help wanted sign out for all the bad guys to come be in his posse. It says like Hedley Lamarr Enterprises, an equal opportunity employer. Mm-hmm. I like that. And I liked that when he gets that rogues gallery together, one of the groups is the Methodists.
Oh,
well, tell me if this follows as a thesis, a retroactive looking thesis, that as much as the thematic thrust was and is right-minded in Blazing Saddles, there's a question that no one was asking, that no white filmmaker, even Mel Brooks, was asking in 1974, and that was kind of the point that Chappelle, oddly enough, to invoke his name in a positive context this week, that he made when he left his show, I need to know they're laughing with me and not at me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that anyone in Mel Brooks' camp was saying, is this joke landing because they're laughing at the buffoonish townsfolk? Or is this joke landing because we said a slur in a funny way? Mm. Because no one was making any effort to draw that line. And yes, it was the old days, but also they certainly could have. Like you said, Camila, I don't think this is less funny if they take out the slurs and a few of the cheap jokes.
Right, and especially too, because like, there was even an example of them, one of the ways they could have not included it, like when he's arriving to town and the bell is ringing and cuts dude off.
Right.
Halfway. Like, right. Mm-hmm. So it's like, so you know you can do it. Like it can be done. Mm-hmm. Like we could still make the same, you know, joke or point or argument or whatever, however you want to frame what you're doing. But at this point, it's like, no, you're just making excuses for being able to use it. And
I do think there's also a little bit of, we make fun of everyone going on the way that like South Park always wanted to do it, you know, like when they have. So Camille, I don't know if you made it this far. He like creates like a rainbow coalition of railroad workers.
No, I got as far as him coming to town.
Yeah. Basically, it's like, here's a whole bunch of new stereotypes.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Right.
And like, you've got Mel Brooks in red face speaking Yiddish, which like is funny to me. I'm a white person and I'm like, that Native American speaking Yiddish? That's funny. There's a lot happening in this movie.
It's too much. But what was going on at the time when Blazing Saddles was number one movie in America?
Let me tell you, it was released February 7th of 1974. It did not reach number one.
And not during Black History Month, too.
When did we declare that? Was that an 80s thing?
No, sir. that was before then. I want to say 60s.
Yes, that too. At least it was not number one then. It did not reach number one until its 10th week of release, April 17th. Most of those weeks, The Exorcist was the number one movie in America. The last two.
Good, clean, fun.
Before. Yeah, you know, something we can all enjoy. The Sting won the two prior weeks. Blazing Saddles eventually winning the weekend of April 17th with $1.2 million. Only a one-week number one. Lost that spot back to The Sting the following week, en route to earning $45.2 million domestic. That's the second top-grossing film of 1974. Inflation calculator, we're long enough ago. That's almost 50 years. About $265 million in today's money. By the way, number three for the year was Young Frankenstein. Those movies are from the same year.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Blazing Saddles in February and Young Frankenstein in mid-December. Expensive Baubles.
Expensive Baubles.
Nominated for three Oscars, Robin.
Madeline Kahn was nominated for Best Supporting Actress, which we will talk about it. And I assume one of the songs got nominated.
Both are correct. Madeline Kahn for Best Supporting Actress lost to
Ingrid Bergman in Murder on the Orient Express.
Correct.
And then she said, song. It's always nice winning an Oscar, which is such a ridiculous thing to say.
It's always nice winning
it
an Oscar.
It was her third.
You know, it's relatable. Isn't it a nice feeling when you get up for brunch on Sunday morning? I mean, win an Oscar.
Yes. I know Young Frankenstein got a screenplay nomination, so I highly doubt that this did. So let's go with art direction or whatever it was called then, production design.
No, the odd one out is editing. It lost best edit. Yeah, why not?
I guess because they go from the universes flip on each other.
That's true.
Okay.
That's true. That was smooth.
Yeah.
Lost that to Towering Inferno. The title song was nominated for Best Original Song. Also lost to a song from the Towering Inferno. We May Never Love Again. Has anyone seen the Towering Inferno?
I have. OJ Simpson is in it.
Oh, jeez. I mean, what wasn't he in at the time? He had a whole career going for himself. Is it good?
No,
it's
I mean,
good title. Great title.
It's an okay disaster movie. It has a really wild cast, like Fred Astaire is in it. And it's okay. It is old-fashioned, and there's no need for normal people not on an Oscars quest to see it. It was nominated for Best Picture.
Blazing Saddles did win the Writers Guild Award for Best Original Screenplay. Most other awards that aren't the Oscars didn't exist yet. So this is on the AFI 100 Years 100 Laughs in sixth place, the number six comedy.
Seriously?
As of the year, this hasn't been updated since the year 2000, that caveat. The top five are Some Like It Hot, Tootsie, Dr. Strangelove, Annie Hall, Duck Soup, Blazing Saddles is sixth.
Ah, the Oscar, the Academy does love their precious nostalgia, yo.
Mm-hmm. That is the American Film Institute.
Whatever.
Who love it even more.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, there are new movies, guys, and it's okay to like them. Like, it's okay to give props and say, like, you know, movies made past the 70s can be a classic at some point. It's okay.
They were polling for this in about 1998, so anything after Back to the Future was considered new. Let's see how it settles. So.
Right.
Blazing Saddles has been in the National Film Registry since 2006. Here's some facts. The earliest version of this script was called Tex X, and was set to be directed by Alan Arkin. So one of those four or five screenwriters wrote a much less Mel Brooksy version of the same thing. Alan Arkin was attached to direct, and James Earl Jones was attached to star.
Interesting.
And that fell apart, but Mel Brooks liked it, and he made a writer's room that had the original screenwriter. I'm sorry, I'm missing his name, but the original screenwriter was still in the writer's room, as was Richard Pryor. Richard Pryor was heavily responsible for the first draft, and less so for future revisions. Mm. Yeah, they basically just zanied it up from there. As you might imagine, the part of Bart was for Richard Pryor. Everyone imagined that it would be Richard Pryor. Mel Brooks wanted Richard Pryor. The studio would not insure him at the time.
Oh, geez.
It was kind of in the depths of some of his arrests and drug problems. There's one maybe apocryphal story that he was still mostly slated to do it, and then he called Mel Brooks and said, I know we're supposed to start tomorrow, but I'm in Cleveland and I don't remember why. That was pretty much that.
It's like, yes, all right, point taken. Okay, got it.
So that's how it got to Cleavon Little. The role of the Waco Kid was offered to John Wayne. They wanted this to be Richard Pryor and John Wayne.
Was John Wayne funny?
And
no.
I'm trying to remember. No, I'm going to go with no. But that would have been the joke, right?
He gets a few jokes off in True Grit, which he did win an Oscar for, but like... Mm. No, he's not funny. He won an Oscar for being John Wayne.
He you know, thought this was perhaps not for his image, but did like it. He said, he read the script, said he'd be first in line to see it, but he couldn't do it. There was somebody else. There was like an aging Western star who brought in and began filming, but was in severe alcohol withdrawal on set. So Gene Wilder was flown in overnight at the last minute.
People were really going through it in the 70s.
Seriously, like the 70s were rough for celebrities.
Unsurprisingly, the studio requested many, many cuts. Mel Brooks wouldn't make them. He had final cut and he removed nothing other than one particularly crude line in the seduction scene. So, you know, let that be a lesson. Collaboration could improve things. And by the way, a pilot for a spin-off TV series exists, was aired, and appears on most Blu-ray releases. Starring Lou Gossett Jr. taking over the role of Black Bart. That's what it was called. It was just called Black Bart, which was the original working title before they got to Blazing Saddles. Yeah,
wow.
Lou Gossett Jr. played the part for 30 minutes, and that was mostly a contractual obligation. They agreed to produce a pilot, never went anywhere, and that was the end of that.
Wow.
Yeah.
That could have been a good show, like because I really like at the end how he's like, I feel like some other town needs me. I really love wandering do-gooder shows, and Sheriff Bart could be a wandering do-gooder. What I was going to say is that I think LeVon Little is so charming and funny in this movie, and I am surprised. I don't think I've ever seen him in anything but this.
Mainly a stage actor. I looked him up. He has other credits, but he was mainly a Broadway guy. In fact, they said that he became very close with Gene Wilder because Gene Wilder was pulling him aside continually throughout the shoot to be like, this is how you do it for a camera, because he had little camera experience.
This, when he holds himself hostage at the beginning to get out of that situation, I just think it's incredible physical comedy, which is hard to do.
It certainly is. But he has some other big credit that I haven't seen. What the hell is it? A lot of TV. I think he has a Tony. Anyway, yes, underused, certainly an underused guy. Really funny, really charming, really good looking. And died pretty young. He died in 1992.
Yeah. Oh, so, shame.
Yeah. In fact, just by happenstance, I saw this on IMDb trivia. Of the top 15 cast members in this, two are alive, and somehow Mel Brooks is one of them.
Oh, wow.
This happens to be a lot of people who happen to die young. It's interesting, that's fact. It's interesting, Robin, that you're wondering if the ending is what gave this its reputation, because I never loved the ending.
Oh, my God! Okay, well, first of all, I love Bugs Bunny shit.
Right.
And which is secondly, especially now, like, I loved it when I was a kid, but watching that last night, it's an improv scene.
Yeah.
Right? The thing I love in long-form improv is that you create the rules of the universe as you go, and that scene just constantly rewrites the rules of the universe that the movie is in, and I find that just delightful.
The more I see it, the more I go, yep, yeah, sure. But it always just felt like, to me, like they didn't know what to do after they fooled them with the fake town. And then they said, well, let's go meta and then circle back to cover up the fact that we don't actually know how to connect these dots.
Yeah, I love it. It doesn't need to make sense.
Why I love it, and the longer we talk, the less I love it. But why I love it is just for, like, the constant little flourishes of comedic writing. Like, some of the lines that the first line I wrote down when the well-to-do guy gets tied to a horse and calmly yells, well, that's the end of this suit. That's the kind of joke that I'm looking for.
Yeah, me too.
After he captures our towering dimwitted friend. Saying that was fine. The bitch was inventing the candygram. That's the kind of joke that I like. That little bit of, like, one step out of universe tagging jokes onto the, not making the point the joke, making the jokes the things tagged on at the end of the line.
Like that, when that's what I always loved about. He's like correcting people that he's not Hedy Lamarr because he doesn't want to get sued, and then somebody's like, "It's 1874. You could sue her."
Yes. That's what always works.
I love that stuff. I love that stuff.
By the way, Hedy Lamarr did sue them.
Wait, what?
I should have put that. Hedy Lamarr, who was barely alive at this point, did sue them for defamation, for impinging on her character. And Mel Brooks said he was honored and just paid what she was asking, or settled out of court, but didn't fight. It was just like, sure, here's your money. He said she never really got the joke, but we were honored to be sued by her, so we just gave her the money. I will add that you do have to be in the mood for Mel Brooks' brand of comedy. I think Young Frankenstein, I alluded to this last week, I still think Young Frankenstein is the best one, and I think you can probably watch Young Frankenstein anytime. But I've put on, like, Men in Tights or Spaceballs when I'm not all the way in that zany mood, and eventually it becomes, you think you're being a lot cuter than you're reading.
Yeah, basically, it gave me a feeling of, like, the way that I was seeing a lot of the humor in this movie was, it was like a bunch of people were in a room and were like, hey, wouldn't it be funny if, and then they did everything that everyone was like, wouldn't it be funny if,
and it was
just kind of too much.
Yeah, I read some descriptions that said that's literally what was happening. It was a big raucous room of people fighting to get their jokes in the movie. And as much as I like, you know, some of them, there's some that are dated, there's some that don't land. And there are plenty that it, like, depends on how generous, like, is Howard Johnson's One Flavor, is that funny or just or could that have been in Scary Movie 4? It depends on how kind you want to be to it on any given day.
Yeah.
It's just a lot of it just goes on too long. A lot of the jokes. Yes. Just too long.
Okay. What I wanted to say, I love Madeline Kahn as much as a person can love a person. Why did she get nominated for an Oscar for this? What?
I think
she had just been nominated the year before.
For what?
Paper Moon.
But we know perfectly well in this day and age that occasionally someone strings four nominations together.
Yeah.
Just for that momentum. People liked the movie a lot. People liked her a lot. I mean, her song and dance number is perfect.
Okay.
No?
I mean, I enjoyed it, but it doesn't stand out to me, and I have all the goodwill possible for her.
Yeah. Are we perhaps learning that the rankings of how much you have warm feelings for this movie depend on exactly when you saw it and perhaps what gender and several other demographic factors you are when you first saw it? Because the fact that I came to this as an 11-year-old white boy is a much different situation than either of you.
Yeah.
So you were like, look at her boobs, give her 10 Oscars. Yes.
It's... Yeah, she's really good. I don't know. Is she the standout? No, I think Gene Wilder is the standout, as in many things, and Cleavon Little. But
I think,
like,
Cleavon Little is by far the best performer in the film.
My name is Jim, but most people call me Jim is that's as good. Funny yes. as anything in the movie.
Yes, that's true. Gene Wilder is, you know, never bad. Obviously.
Yeah, I got to see more of I know that his 80s stuff gets a little hit or miss, but there's a bunch that I haven't seen. And several of them are on the list, and we just haven't landed on them yet.
Depending on what mood Tony's in, we just might.
I want to get towards a rating for it. I feel like, you know, there are probably some big Blazing Saddles fans who are expecting a much different conversation today. But Camila, I also want to thank you for, you know, letting me throw it straight to you and responding the way you did.
No problem.
Hey, here's, because I should get to make the final point, right? Here's what I'll say is I'm still going to give this movie a high score. Yes, it'll be lower than the score I wrote down the other day, but I'm still going to give this movie a very high score because I always, you know, try to stress that you don't have to hate something just because you get a more complete view of what it is and the impact that it has on people. Mm-hmm. You don't have to, you know, saying there are problems with this and we should acknowledge them and talk to them does not mean I'm canceling it. I hate it. I'll never watch it again. You're allowed to like
sometimes
a thing
it does.
With a
sometimes.
Yeah. There are certainly plenty of cases, but you're permitted to like a thing and also be in possession of a fuller understanding of it.
Yeah,
and
I love you know. Fight. I continue to love Fight Club and all of its toxic masculinity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought about Fight Club too. Like, do people like this movie for the wrong reasons?
Well, we talked about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Came down to you know, I was Fight on board Club's... for Brad's abs. Like that's. That's what I'm campaigning for.
Well, we'll look for a deleted scene when Cleavon Little takes his shirt off and just glistens in the sun to see if that gets you to 1.5 on Letterboxd.
It probably would.
Yeah.
Let's rate it. I still love it. I acknowledge those flaws, and I do. Now, yeah, I agree. I wish that it were existed in a form that did not have to play so fast and loose and go over the line so often. But I still like it. Like I said, I like it for writing and performances. I think it's very funny and I grew up with it. So I still have to go to 84. Robin?
I was going to go with 65 and I'm going to give it a heftier deduction after hearing Camila talk about it and just also working it through. So I'm going to go to 55 because I still want it to be above that 50 mark. I do think that this is a movie that if you have a high tolerance for slurs, which is a weird thing to have, but some people do, you should watch this for other comedy reasons.
Eh.
No, we gave it the same deduction. I started in the high 90s.
I see.
Well, the difference here is I am not going to give it a deduction. I'm actually adding 2 points to it after listening to you both talk about your love of its comedy, but also let's remember that I only watched it to a certain point, and I basically am giving it 7 points for the gag with a old a Negro spiritual at the beginning.
It's
and also
Bugs Bunny shit.
Right. Yeah. And also, you know, once he gets out of the quicksand, hitting the dude with the shovel.
Was that a total of seven or yes. Was that seven plus two?
That was a total of seven. I started off at five.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Is that our biggest spread?
Remember a couple weeks ago when we were the closest? I think this is the opposite of that. That's a 48 and two thirds. I bet nobody listening thought that we would go below sea level on right. Blazing Saddles. But no, it's a good conversation, and I appreciate the opportunity to, you know, be in a conversation where I can be open about it, and thank you both.
Oh, thanks. Thank you both for your sensitivity to the subject. I know y'all don't know this, listeners don't know this, but Sean asked if I would like to have a conversation off mic before we started recording, and I let him know. I was like, you know what, I ain't gonna say nothing to y'all that I'm not willing to say on recorded, so...
Which I appreciate. Thank you.
It helps that we're drawing this 115th and not like third. Like we've established right. a bit of understanding right. over the past 3 years.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. This would have been really uncomfortable had this been like one of the first five films.
Hi, nice to meet you. Let's talk about the N-word. So, Camila, do you get a big go because there's a mugshot in this movie?
Is there? No, I don't get a bingo.
Okay. Oh, I was like, that would be a nice gift.
Right? It would be. It would be really fortuitous had that been the thing that Tony wanted to give me as a consolation prize. But no. Nobody was in drag.
Someone must have.
No drag.
Nobody was in drag. That would have got me a bingo.
It seems that someone must have said either don't you leave me or I can explain.
I don't think that there is an I can explain.
Yeah,
that sucks. You're right. It does seem like that should have been in there. Nobody asked for a beer in the saloon at all.
I don't think
the Waco
so.
Kid is constantly has a beer. No, he's always just producing them. He doesn't yes. have to ask. They're right. just there in his hand,
in his pocket universe.
Yeah.
Well, at least we got a mugshot no. finally.
No, I don't think. Don't think there's a bingo. Ah, well. Next week when we get to, you know, I don't know, Shaft. How are we going to bounce off of this?
Gonna be Django Unchained.
It's time for the number one movie in America. The name of this podcast, not the thing I'm trying to say. It's time for You Can't Handle the Truth. That was the name in the before times. How long am I allowed to talk about 2001 A Space Odyssey?
Like, I don't know, 3 minutes. You're wrong is the problem.
I gave it a 9 out of 10. My thing okay. is, I gave it a 9 out of 10, not a 10 out of 10. I just, semi-famously, I had never seen 2001 A Space Odyssey because I was waiting for a good in-theater opportunity to view it. I wanted to see it on a big screen. I wanted to have it wash over me. The Manor Theater just did their 100th anniversary. They did a film from every decade. I actually, like, kind of wanted to take a day off work anyway right about then. So in the middle of the afternoon, I went and saw it on the big screen. It was packed, by the way. I think they're going to investigate more repertory showings at the Manor. Don't think I'm talking out of school there, because this was 2 o'clock on a Thursday afternoon, and
oh,
there
wow.
were 60 people watching 2001 A Space Odyssey. So I finally got that opportunity, and I like it a lot. There are any number of scenes in there that I think are perfect and chilling. You know, all of the ape stuff is amazing. Mm-hmm. When he's pulling the circuits out and Hal's brain is decaying, it's amazing. When Hal mm-hmm. kills the one guy, there's all of these stretches, and then there's 7 minutes of a spaceship slowly turning to a orchestral suite, and I'm like, yeah, I know.
Who
You're
are you? What have you done with Sean Collier?
I know.
Why weren't you like pondering the nature of existence while watching that?
I did at the end. I totally did at the end. I like the end. Well, I like most of the ending, not when it's like minute 10 of the freak out and we're just doing helicopter footage of the Grand Canyon through an Instagram filter. But yes, at the end, I had that going on. But like for most of that, I'm like, man, this movie is impressed with itself. And I'm impressed, too. I'm impressed that you found a way to get convincing space footage in 1967. Great technical achievement. That doesn't mean we need to be here all day so we can watch it turn for 14 minutes. 9 out of 10.
Okay. I don't understand what's happening.
I mean, I've been stressed, you know, maybe that played a part.
I'm kind of like, Shod, blink twice if you need help. Is Venom at the wheel?
And here's the other thing. Most cineasts would never dare to say The Shining is clearly the better movie. The Shining is my favorite movie. Mm-hmm. I think it's perfect. And it's 3 years later, or I'm sorry, it's 13 years later. But I see, like, things in 2001 that are a little refined and a little more polished mood tonally in The Shining. So I'm probably going to side with it for that reason. I like it a lot. I would watch it again today if I had nothing to do for the next 3 hours. Mm-hmm. But it's a little below what I thought it would be. Briefly, Men. I saw Men. It's a good try. It's a big swing. They swung for the fences and hit a double.
So many people on Twitter,
too scary, you know, for me?
So many people on my Twitter feed are just like, this is the best movie ever.
No, I agree. This is one where some people are saying this is dumb and some people are saying this is the best. Mm. And I think they're both wrong. I think it's kind of good. Yeah. It's certainly ambitious and audacious and shocking. And Jesse Buckley is great. I want him to work with another writer. This is Alex Garland, who did Ex Machina and Annihilation. Mm. He usually writes his own stuff. He's a better director than he is a writer. Sometimes the ideas are either beating you over the head with a metaphor or not coming through at all. I think there was a better movie in there than the one we got.
Is it too scary for me?
It is pretty scary and it is immensely gory.
Okay.
Wow. So,
but you know, I love this. Seems like a mother type of movie, and
it is a little bit of a mother type of movie. I thought 2001 was a little bit of a mother type of movie.
I usually land on the side of mother type of movies. I'll take the mic because I saw Melancholia for the first time, and
Oh
my god, that's like one of the best movies I've ever seen in my life.
I don't think I've ever...
And I just keep rewatching the first 10 minutes. Watched it because I watched Moonfall, which I will also give a thumbs up to for very different reasons. And then I was like, wouldn't it be funny if I watched Melancholia for the first time now?
Moonfall isn't good.
Oh, Moonfall was a gay old time. They wrote Gravity Waves.
Oh, good grief.
Moonfall was not what I wanted Moonfall to be. I don't know what that was, but... Here's the problem with Moonfall. They keep Moonfall spoilers. It gets much more complicated than just the moon falling. I'm sorry. Was the moon falling not enough of an incident for you to wrap your film around?
The extent to which they try to make it make sense is so precious to me. I love it so much. It made the movie better for me. And also, it seemed like they didn't have all of the budget that they might have wanted for a movie in which the moon falls. And so long exposition scenes about what a superstructure is and how you power it with a dying dwarf star. Cheap.
Yeah. You had them. There were certainly plenty of those. So you recommend people watch Moonfall, do you?
Listen, if you like dumb action movies, you should watch Moonfall.
I like Patrick Wilson. That's what I like.
And he is also very charming. And so is Halle Berry.
Yeah. See? I'm in. Is that... to rent? Is that on, is it digital right now?
I rented it from Redbox.
Okay.
If I had spent $20 to own it, I would not be upset.
Oh, well.
Oh, you know
but
what
I
happened?
Felt that I'm way in... about Ambu Los Angeles, and so.
I plugged in, so now I'm in terrible lighting. You know what hurt Moonfall for me? Is, do you two remember that one day where there was like, they were like, there are going to be devastating thunderstorms. There are going to be thunderstorms that cause a biblical flood. Everyone go home. And the city shut down. Mm-hmm. And then none of that happened.
Yeah.
Yes.
I had a ticket to see Moonfall, which I was reviewing. Like, I had to watch Moonfall on this Thursday evening. I had a ticket to see Moonfall at AMC. I got there. AMC had shut down their theater because of these thunderstorms that were going to happen. I frantically drove over to Cinemark Monroeville Mall, where the mall had shut down, but the movie theater was soldiering on. So I had to go to two movie theaters and buy tickets twice to see Moonfall. By that time, I was like, this moon better fall pretty good for me to go through all of this.
That's a lot.
I thought I had a bad day that day.
Melancholia is good. I don't know how often people go back to it, but yeah, if you want an end of the world movie that will also make you go, that's pretty. That is the movie for you.
Yeah. And I saw The Lost City on an airplane seat back as the director intended.
Yeah.
It did exactly what I needed it to do.
Yeah. Distracts you from whatever else is going around.
Mm-hmm. Camila, what you watching?
Like I said earlier, I watched Goodfellas for the first time
Yeah.
And after this episode, there's going to be a lot of people that don't like me. Goodfellas. Goodfellas is not a good movie. I don't know.
Wow.
Why for we put it on such a high pedestal? it's not good. There is like nothing happens. There's too much. There's too much telling, not enough showing. There's no real plot, and the dialogue sometimes seems like the dialogue between characters. It feels like it's improv'd because there's a lot of repetitive talk.
Yes. And
like he's like, oh, no, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. He's like, I told him I would do it for him. I'm sorry, I'm sorry. I told him I would do it for him. Like, okay. So it's just not a good, I just did not enjoy it. And then to the two people that are chosen to do the narratives are Ray Liotta and Lorraine Bracco. And I don't understand why Lorraine Bracco, why her character, like why we needed to hear her narrative.
I do not like that character.
Yeah.
That she got nominated for an Oscar. I find that objectionable. I think Lorraine Bracco was an incredible actress based on her work on The Sopranos, but I don't like that part of that movie.
Right.
Which is weird because I love Sharon Stone in Casino. So like Scorsese knows how to do crazy lady on the rampage, right? In a way that this rampaging crazy lady will like, but I don't like Lorraine Bracco in Goodfellas. But it's interesting to hear you say, like commenting on the dialogue sounding weird, because to me it's so iconic. Like it just is. That's the way people talk in gangster movies, because that's like, I saw Goodfellas when I was young. And also, let's be real, Good Feathers, the Animaniacs parody.
The breeze is coming out of the west.
What are you, a bird brain? The breeze is coming from the ocean.
Yeah, and the ocean is west. The mountains are north.
No, they're not. The ocean is north. Are you saying that I don't know my directions? That I'm some sort of wrong way Corrigan of a misguided directionalist goonie bird? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm just saying that the breeze is coming from the west. But who cares? I mean, it's no big deal.
Okay, that's it.
Yes. Absolutely 100% better representation.
So like... That repetition stuff you're talking about, and just the like the cadence that everything has, like I never even question it, because it's just like, oh, no, that's how this movie is.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it's just I did not enjoy it, you know. And it's not to say, and I love gangster flicks, so it's not even about anything like that. I really, you know, shout out Ray Liotta. You know, Joe Pesci.
Well, it's my privilege. Thank you.
You know, all of them, like all those people, like this is it. On paper, yes, this seems like something that I would have been like, yay, I would have a Goodfellas poster in my dorm room or whatever. But, you know, nah, it just didn't hit home for me.
You were a Sopranos person,
oh,
right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that was my jam.
The first time I watched Goodfellas, and I came to it pretty, I mean, probably got to it, you know, 15 years after it came out, 12 to 15 years after it came out. I was watching Sopranos at the time, and it didn't really land for me. Mm-hmm. And I remember... for someone telling me like, oh, you can't watch Sopranos because Sopranos goes, you know, takes that ball and runs with it so far that it's not going to do well if you have Sopranos in your head.
It's right. Like when I saw Unforgiven and I was like, okay, so this is bad Deadwood.
yes, like that.
Yeah, I totally get it. Yeah, maybe had I seen it in the 80s like I thought I did, or whenever it came out, the 90s, mm-hmm. whenever.
90.
Yeah. Maybe I would have liked it much better then, but now I've just got too many other screen gangster gems in my head that that I would much rather spend time with. Even the story, like how it starts of like bringing of, you know, Ray Liotta as a child and how he, you know, idolizes the dudes in the neighborhood and stuff. I was like, you know, I'm like, A Bronx Tale did this better. Like, I just want to go watch A Bronx Tale now.
A Bronx Tale is such a good movie. That movie
is.
I know that a lot of people always cite that as one of those underrated movies, but it's still underrated.
So the other film that I watched and enjoyed was The Devil You Know. Which,
what is that?
The Devil You Know is described as a gritty crime drama, but not so gritty. But it stars Michael Ealy and Omar Epps.
Oh, yeah, I watched that.
Glenn Thurman. Yeah, like, I really liked it. And I just want to, like, give a shout out to, like, it had some really strong performances. I think Michael Ealy was underused because, I mean, I don't come into a movie. You don't tell me Michael Ealy is going to be in a movie and I don't see his gorgeous green eyes.
His incredibly beautiful face.
Right. For less than 50% of the movie. Damn it.
Right. They should just have like a picture in picture. Here's Michael Ealy's right. face to look at.
Exactly. Just
while everything else is going on.
You know why I'm here. But I want to give a shout out to William Catlett, who plays like one of the brothers in the film. And he is amazing. Like, he just gives like this really solid performance. And there was twice when I like jumped, I was like shocked and like jumped off the couch basically. And just like, what is happening? Like, so I would, it's my only, the only downside other than lack of Ealy on screen time was it could have been a little tighter. Like, it was probably 20 minutes too long.
But, as so many things are.
I know, but I enjoyed it. And I would highly suggest it to watch.
Yeah, that's one that gives you what you want when you look at the poster and press play, doesn't it? So, let's draw a movie.
Sean is echoey because he had to change locations. Everyone, listen. I went to Missouri. We're being cautious because I might have brought COVID back with me.
Right.
Hopefully the content makes up for the audio issues.
Yes, exactly. We'll be in person again next time.
Camila has a nice office, everybody. And my coworker, Lauren Davidson, another great writer with Pittsburgh Magazine, who is a big fan of the podcast, by the way, excitedly came in today and said, I was driving and I saw an office and it said Rugged Angel on it. Does Camila have an office? I said, yes.
That's
very
awesome.
Nice place.
Shout out, Lauren.
But yes, I am recording this from the office. I just had to relocate. There have been a variety of technical difficulties. Now I'm just desperately trying to open our gigantic list of movies so that we can go home.
I could also do it, I guess.
Yeah.
All right. The number is 1534. Where will that put us in the alphabet?
Oh, this is the suspense you both feel every week.
Yep. It is 1998's Vampires.
Which vampires are they?
Oh my, is this the one that...
I think it's with James Woods. I think it's really bad.
The second one is John Bon Jovi. The first one, is I think, is James Woods.
Yep.
Interesting. Okay.
Listen, I'm holding the only veto, and it'll be a cold day in hell before I veto the worst John Carpenter movie.
Right? So.
It's on Tubi.
Excellent. This will be so much.
Oh, I'm
double
sorry.
Check that it's going to be on Tubi tomorrow because we're recording on the last day of the month. But yeah, I will watch this for free.
Yeah.
And Wikipedia says it's a neo-Western. That's how we transition away from Blazing Saddles.
Excellent.
All right.
A neo-Western vampire movie. It's less than 2 hours long, and Cheryl Lee, better known as Laura Palmer from Twin Peaks, is in it. What more could I and I alone possibly
right?
want?
It's like, here you go, Sean. Vampires.
Oh, I feel great now. What technical difficulties? I get to watch a vampire movie I definitely wouldn't have watched otherwise. Well, before we get to that, and I have a better time than everybody else, does anyone remember what week Blazing Saddles hit number one?
That was it February of 1974.
It was February. And by the way, Black History Week started in 1915. By the early 1960s, most people were celebrating February as Black History Month in the United States. It was formally recognized by Gerald Ford in 1976.
There it is. And you know, and I just wrote a piece about this. I should have had that right on. I wrote something for the Post-Gazette in February about this.
You did.
I really liked your piece about mental illness movies.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, that was really interesting. And some of those movies I'd never heard of, like the one with Diana Ross, like I'm like, what?
That was for Video Trust, which is just basically like some organization for film librarians, basically. I do something for them every month. For the longest time, I was doing pieces specifically called Black on Silver Screen. So I would pick a certain Black movie star or has contributed something amazing to film and cinema and just write something on them. And then they asked me to do something for the Mental Health Awareness Month. And then I'm doing one for Black Music Appreciation Month. So I compiled a list of movies for June.
Awesome.
Yeah, drop links in the Twitter. Now, finally, let's end this episode.
Oh, boy.
So before we get into John Carpenter's interesting 90s period next week, Blazing Saddles released in February of 1974, but reached number one April 17th of that year. Think back to, you know, before any of us were born.
Right.
What was the number one song in America mid-April of 74?
Elton John.
That's a good one.
Correct.
What? That's all I got. Somebody else has to take it from there.
Elton John in the 70s. Is it Benny and the Jets?
It's Benny and the Jets. You were right on it.
I thought that was going to take forever.
Me too.
I thought you were going to have to like do charades.
Right. Because my first guess was going to be Lynyrd Skynyrd. I was like, to keep in the vein of this fucking movie, it's probably Lynyrd Skynyrd. But
if it had been 3 days later, it would have been hopeless. 3 days later, it was a song called TSOP, parentheses, The Sound of Philadelphia by MFSB and the 3 Degrees.
Oh, gee, no way.
But no, it's Benny and the Jets, Elton John. And what? And there's your gift. After technical difficulties, drawing a weird John Carpenter film, interesting conversations that needed to be had, what better than us going 50 years backwards and the two of you nailing the number one song in America?
I fucking love
it. Isn't
that
nice?
It was nice.
What were we talking about? Michael Ealy's face.